Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your window into everything new and noteworthy in the world of food and cooking. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda. Our guest today is Liz Thorpe, author of The Book of Cheese, The Essential Guide to Discovering Cheeses You'll Love, out now from our sister company, Flatiron Books. Liz, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands. Spice Islands uses a craft approach to capture the volatile oil of each spice, which gives it its flavor. From Saigon cinnamon and dillweed to bay leaves, garlic powder, cumin, and turmeric, they maintain a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes. And pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. This book is organized differently from other cheese books I've seen by gateway. Tell us about that, about the gateways.
Yeah, so I wanted to find a way of organizing the often overwhelming world of cheese in a way that would make sense to, like, the average person who likes to eat it. So I came up with this concept of the gateway cheese. There are 9 of them, and they're very common kind of general types of cheese that most everyone's heard of, and I map the whole world of cheese out from there. So if you know you like brie, you can go to the brie gateway and find 40 other things that you're probably going to be interested in.
This time of year means lots of holiday parties and get-togethers, and for me, that always means cheese plates. What are some of your tips for putting together an effortlessly chic but also crowd-pleasing cheese plate? So that people will like, but they might not know yet, but they might be excited to learn about.
Definitely. Well, a couple of just general tips. I like to always serve people a range and variety. So that would mean, you know, like using the book as a sort of shopping tool, picking cheese from a couple of different gateways. I always try to have a soft thing, a hard thing, you know, a couple of different milk types. So that's just sort of general cheese plate 101. I would say to really look at gateways that are the most crowd-friendly. So the Manchego chapter, for example, I describe those cheeses as the ones you're least likely to have heard of but most likely to enjoy. And it's lots of aged sheep milk cheeses and also aged goat milk cheeses. Most people haven't heard of them. Most people haven't had them, but they're just very easy to like. They're very approachable. They're tasty. They're versatile. They go with lots of wines. So that's an area I like to feature. I always like to get aged Gouda in the mix, which in my book I have in the Parmesan chapter, actually, because it's hard and nutty and butterscotchy. And I just find everybody, you can't lose with cheeses like that. And then you got to get something creamy and buttery and brie-like in there.
The book is full of all of these really incredible images. They're almost these portraits of the cheeses that highlight how different types of cheeses can look from one another. What are some characteristic visual cues in cheeses that can tell you something interesting about them? When we see a color or a texture, what are we looking at?
Yeah, that's a great question. You can tell a lot about a cheese just by looking at it. You don't have to smell it or taste it or touch it. So, for example, if you see a cheese with a white rind on the outside, sort of a white soft skin that looks like a brie, you're looking at what's technically called a bloomy rind, and it's a mold-ripened cheese. We're taught not to eat mold, but in this case, it's totally okay and encouraged. So a white-rinded cheese is going to be buttery and creamy, and it's going to have flavors that are sort of like cream and maybe a bit like mushroom. And so you can tell that just by looking at it. A cheese that's orange on the outside is going to be washed in salt water. So that's going to be saltier. It's going to be a little bit stinkier, a little bit more pungent, maybe with flavors that are more like cured meat. So Taleggio would be a classic. If you look at a cheese that is deep yellow in color on the inside, that's a dead giveaway for a grass-fed cow's milk cheese. So, you know, it's just kind of like these little things. If you know what to look for, you can start to decode all that cheese in front of you at the supermarket.
we talk a little bit about cheeses that used to be really trendy and kind of cutting edge. You talk in the book about how 15 years ago that was Manchego.
Yes.
Or I think about Humboldt Fog as being a cheese that was sort of in everyone's imagination for a period of time. What are some of the cheese trends that you see coming up and cheeses that you see going more mainstream or breaking out in the future?
Oh, that's a great question. So you nailed, like, Manchego for me is the great, in the course of my career, which is 15 years, Manchego in the beginning of my career was this exotic thing. And now it's really, I mean, I've had people sort of turn their noses up at me if I suggest serving it because it's just way too common and way too pedestrian. But I mean, some of the trends I'm seeing are a lot more interest in where our cheese and our food in general comes from. So people being a lot more interested in the farm and the maker, and that seems to sort of like naturally translate into more of an interest in cheeses made in this country because we have more of a story that we can access. And it's more likely that there's one cheese made by one maker. Whereas like a brie or a cheddar coming from Europe might be made by hundreds of makers and you don't even know who they are. So that's something I see happening. I see people being interested in seeking out different milk types. I have a lot of people who ask me about buffalo milk cheese or sheep milk cheese, but just sort of trying to get off the cow tip, so to speak. And I mean, some cheeses that I see, like Gruyere is a Swiss cheese that for me has become almost like, you know, it's like a cheese that no one used to know and now everybody knows. And it's completely available everywhere. Every supermarket has it, and it's always really reliable and really good because it's very tightly controlled in Switzerland. Its production is very regulated. So I'm starting to see some of those sort of like what used to be European exotics becoming the sort of like the new standard here.
Before we continue, a quick word from our podcast sponsor. Fall is here, and for me, that means cooking richer, heartier recipes that keep me warm and satisfied during the cooler months. And for a noticeably richer flavor, I always opt for premium spices from Spice Islands. By sun-drying many of their spices and de-stemming their chili peppers by hand, Spice Islands uses a craft approach to deliver the most authentic and intense flavor possible. They also take extra steps to ensure the richness of their flavors, like cryogenically freezing their cumin to preserve its oils, or milling their garlic to a true powder so it doesn't add any grittiness to your dishes. Better yet, Spice Islands maintains a strict standard for each item to ensure consistency, quality, and flavor. So whether you're looking for flavor adventure or simply better tasting meals, fill your pantry with Spice Islands and taste the difference in every bottle. Visit spiceislands.com/clever for more spice facts and delicious recipes, including one for spiced maple carrots, a quick simple side to complement any meal. That's spiceislands.com/clever and pick up Spice Island spices in the premium spice section of your local retailers. Everyone has their own personal gateway cheese, or maybe a few, those kind of archetypal childhood sensory memories of cheese that really were the first time you thought about cheese as a food. Mine is Baby Bells and those little wax-wrapped circles. And I think I liked them because they're so soft and bouncy and snackable, and you talk in the book a lot about snacking cheeses, so I think that was my snacking cheese gateway. But I wanted to know kind of what were your gateway cheeses? What are some of your early cheese memories? And how did your relationships with those cheeses evolve over the course of your life and cheese career?
Well, it's funny because I have very specific childhood memories of a couple of different cheeses. I don't know that they necessarily led me very far at the time, but like, and I think I even write about this in the book, but like, I remember when my parents would get Boursin, which is this like spreadable cheese. It's flavored with garlic and herbs. It really tastes like garlic and herbs. It's not about the flavor of the cheese or the milk. But that to me, it's like was symbolic of fancy and special occasion. And we only had it like at the holidays. And I remember sort of the idea of like having this precious thing that you got only occasionally and only when it was, you know, a big deal was warranted. And I do feel like to this day, when I entertain, I think about what it felt like to get that special thing. And I think about that when I pick cheeses for my guests because I want them to feel like they're having this like little present that's not maybe not for every day, but is so memorable, you know, in that crowd and in that celebratory context. We really ate very pedestrian cheese when I was growing up, though. I mean, I guess I would say the other cheese that really is cemented in my mind in a bad way is, and I definitely talk about this in the book, is Swiss cheese. Because for me, as a kid, Swiss cheese was that cheese you could get at the deli that had holes in it. And I thought it was so nasty. And it kind of scarred me for years because I just thought that was Swiss cheese. I didn't know that there were other cheeses made in Switzerland. I thought that was it. So it took me like 25 years to try a cheese from Switzerland because I thought they were all like deli slicing. And they're not. That's generally pretty bad cheese, and there are many excellent cheeses that come from Switzerland and the mountains of Europe. But those are a couple of my like seared in my brain memories.
I love how you talk about the preciousness of the sort of special occasion, even if it was in retrospect something kind of pedestrian. But I think we remember that. And now it might be a Harbison or an Epoisse that you're bringing to someone's house. And it's this sort of special thing.
And I do think about it's funny you mentioned those two, because those are individual cheeses like in little rounds or little boxes. And Boursin similarly is like in a little round. And there was something that felt like you're getting a gift of this little round of food. And so those are often the cheeses I serve for special occasions, Epoisse and Harbison.
So I wanted to ask you too about sort of the opposite, which is everyday cheeses. I think that people can feel like, okay, when I'm making a cheese plate, I might want to learn about all of these cheeses, but I eat cheese every day.
Yes.
And I eat probably a lot of the same cheeses every day because mm-hmm. that's just what I'm used to buying. So how can people use the book to kind of think differently about the cheeses that they keep on hand just for everyday snacking or for cooking or for using in the ways that they might use, you know, sort of a standard block of cheddar in the fridge right now?
That's very relevant to my life right now because I have two small children and we eat cheese literally at every meal, mainly because I can get it out of the fridge and onto the table in like under 45 seconds, which is often critical. And most of the cheese we eat is what cheese people would call boring or everyday or nothing special. And yet it's most of what we consume in our family. So I think and this really, when I was writing the book and I was working on the Havarti gateway, This was like my big aha moment because I realized, you know, Havarti is kind of considered to be like a nothing special everyday cheese. And when I took the time to actually sit down and eat a piece of it and put it with other foods, I was sort of like reminded that it had all these amazing everyday usability qualities. And for example, in that gateway, all of those cheeses are amazing melting cheeses. So we will often have cheese melted on toast for breakfast, or we will have like cheese melted on vegetables at dinner, just like, again, because I can do it fast. But that's something that I wasn't doing before I worked on the book because I just didn't like think about it. I did sort of put cheese in this special occasion box. And now we eat it a lot more. You know, grate whatever hard cheese I have into salads or into roast, like on top of roasted vegetables for flavor and for protein. And because my kids like cheese, they'll eat anything with cheese on it. So I just think it made me think differently about, even though I eat cheese all the time, it made even me think differently about how it shouldn't be this rarefied thing. It's just like a really good eating staple.
Liz, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Check out the book, The Book of Cheese, The Essential Guide to Discovering Cheeses You'll Love. It's the perfect holiday gift if you're going to someone's house for dinner or doing some sort of a secret Santa at work. It's a really beautiful book. So check it out, The Book of Cheese by Liz Thorpe. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster, your window into everything new and noteworthy in the world of food and cooking.